Hi, everybody. Welcome to a very special edition of Mindshift Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. I'm bringing you a conversation that I had with my sister, Valerie, last August. We just had gotten back from an epic trip to France and Belgium. We did a World War I battlefield tour. We go every year, at least I try to do. I've gone 3 years in a row now, and she came with me again this last summer. And before she flew back home to Seattle, we sat down and recorded this episode. Now, if you heard our conversation from last year, we did one when she was here last time. We called it Surviving a Fundamentalist Upbringing. And so this is kind of a one-year update. What has changed? What's different in my life and in Val's life? And we kind of revisit some of the past stuff. And then we talk about sort of this reconstruction after deconstruction piece, which is something that I've really been focusing on in the last couple of months, ever since I did the live podcast with Stacey Ray on the 16th of September. And I think that episode is going to be coming up here pretty soon. I just got to get the files from my friend Big Steve. We had it at his studio in Southeast Seattle area, the Kent, Washington area. So that should be coming out soon, maybe a couple of episodes. So I'm really excited to be bringing you this conversation, like I said, with me and my sister Val. It's a good one because we sat down and we just kind of had an organic conversation about how things have changed in our lives. And really, we've reflected more and more on the damage, the effects that religion, fundamentalism, evangelicalism have had on our lives. And this is a long process to disentangle yourself from. And that's why I've called this episode Disentangling Yourself from Religion. And this is one of the many things that I learned from David Hayward, the Naked Pastor from Canada, our podcast a few months ago, where we talked about how difficult it is to tear yourself away from religion, from this all-pervasive thing that was basically, it was our whole identity. It was everything to us. It meant everything. It was all part of everything that we did, all of our decisions that we made, the way we viewed other people, relationships, family, all kinds of decisions had to be filtered through that lens of religion and what's God's will and what does the Bible say. And then when you try to disentangle yourself from that, it's a long process. It's a lifelong process and it's not easy at all. So I hope this conversation with Val is a helpful one for you. If you're in this process like myself, like my sister Valerie, of disentangling yourself from religion, it's not easy, but I'm here to be a resource to you. You can get a hold of me in a variety of different ways. And as always, those are in the show notes. And you can always get in touch with my sister Valerie too by just getting in touch with me. So let's go on into it. This is a great discussion with myself and my sister Valerie Haycock Cunningham on the topic of disentangling yourself from religion. Coming to you live on a rainy day here in North Wales on the Rock. I'm sitting here with my sister, Valerie Haycock Cunningham. Do you want to say hi to everybody?
Yeah, hi.
We're going straight into this podcast today because I don't want to waste time doing a bunch of editing. So we're just going to sit here and have a great conversation. Well, hopefully we are. No, we are, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we will.
We're going to have a great conversation. It's been almost exactly 1 year since we did our podcast, Surviving a Fundamentalist Upbringing. And then we just returned from an epic World War I battlefield tour.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
We've just done another one in Belgium and France. Well, France and Belgium. Mm-hmm. And drove all the way over to France and came up through Belgium, saw some amazing things. We're both into World War I. We love the history. We love all that. So what was your favorite part? I think I know what my favorite part was of this trip. What was the best thing that stood out to you of coming through France and Belgium?
I had so many favorites. I think one of my personal favorites probably was when we went and toured the Hawthorne Ridge mine hole,
yeah,
the
great
crater, and talking to the archaeologists there and just being able to walk down into the crater and seeing it firsthand. The size and the scope of that was insane.
really is.
But the whole trip was just, it was really educational. And I don't know. Other than that, I don't know that I had a favorite. I enjoyed it all.
Yeah, it was great. We had a great time in Belgium as well. We stayed in a place called Ypres. And we had a guy named Frank, who was a super friendly Belgian. Yes. And he said, we stayed there 4 nights, didn't we?
Yeah.
And he said, anyone who stays beyond a third night is in the category of friends.
Yeah.
So he took Valerie kayaking on last day. Then he took us out to a local pub out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh my gosh.
Never know that there was a pub. It just looked like an old brick farmhouse in the middle of the countryside. And yet the food was amazing.
Yeah.
The Belgian beer is amazing. I came back with a lot of beer. This became a running joke all the way through. Every time we stopped at a store, I think you were looking at me a little funny.
Yeah.
I kept coming out with more and more, you know, six packs of beer or giant beer bottles.
It's so cheap.
And my wife kept saying on Facebook, it's not all about being cheap, you know, so. We drank our way across Belgium and France, and we saw some World War I battlefields. But we did a podcast last year, Surviving a Fundamentalist Upbringing, and I think a lot of it was more your story of getting pregnant, and they made you give her up for adoption.
Yep.
And if you haven't listened to that podcast, you definitely need to go back and listen to that, because it's a heartbreaking story.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's hard to live through.
Yeah, we were raised in a fundamentalist home, according to the teachings of good old Bill Gothard.
Oh, yeah.
And we got a lot of spankings, or at least I did. Yeah. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
Oh, you got a lot of spankings.
Oh, yeah.
They subscribe to the spare the rod, spoil the child theology. Mm-hmm. You have to spank the child till you break his or her will.
Yep.
Till they cry. That's when you know, as a parent, you've broken their will. And it was all about the parent knows best. The parent is supposed to stop the child from this proclivity to sin and everything else. So it's tantamount to abuse.
Yeah, it was,
in many
because
ways.
I was about 12 years old when they started going to the Bill Gothard seminars. So I was going into my teenage years. I had never been physically abused like that before. And to have that start when you're 12, 13 years old, it was such a shock to my psyche, my emotions, my emotionally, you know, my development as a person.
Well, that's a critical time in your life, too. 12, 13 years old. Mm-hmm. The difference between you and me was the fact that I was just raised in it.
Yeah.
I didn't know any better.
Yeah,
so for you, it was a big shock. For me, it was just the way it was.
Yeah.
I grew up getting spanked from day one, pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, I was in church from day one, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So we talked about that last year. And I was really glad that Valerie's come back a year later, because we wanted to sit down and have an update, I guess. What's changed in the last year? We were both pretty still, I guess, emotionally raw from our experiences with our parents.
Yeah.
We had found out that our father was a pedophile very late in his life. And my mom, she supported him and turned against his victims, us, his children.
Yeah.
And so that destroyed the family in many ways.
Oh, yeah. Tore it in half.
It split us right down the middle.
Yeah.
Some of us are still recovering from that. But I think for me, I don't know about you, but that experience, as painful as it was to go through, the decision to walk away from my mother and some of the sisters that supported her and my dad was the best thing I ever did.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
For emotional health.
Oh, absolutely.
I haven't talked to my mom in 6 years, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I never thought it would be that way, because we were quite close.
Right.
We used to talk on the phone probably once a month, or if not more, for hours. And I'd just check in and see how she was doing. And all that's gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I feel so emotionally healthy.
I know.
It's insane.
That's pretty sad, isn't it?
Yeah. And somehow that's all tied in with this whole thing of deconstructing, walking away from not just the church, but perhaps Christianity as well, which is the whole system we were raised in.
Yeah, right.
It was a
huge
system.
Huge influence.
Yeah. And it's something I talked about with David Hayward, the Naked Pastor. He said that religion is all pervasive, and it really is. We've been talking about this driving around Belgium and France, how completely pervasive it was in our lives. I mean, how pervasive would you say it was in your life? You were raised
saturated.
In it.
Absolutely saturated.
Totally saturated.
Yeah, because when I was really little, we didn't go to church at all.
Yeah,
and then when after my mom divorced my dad, then she married your dad. And
yes,
then we started
going
Jerry
to Springer show.
Yeah, that's a whole nother podcast.
Technically, you're my half sister.
Yeah.
We have the same mother, but a different father. My dad is, your dad is my uncle.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's
your dad's
it's a
my
mess.
Uncle. So anyway, yeah. So then we started going to church. I was probably 5 or 6. So before those years, I didn't know church. I didn't mess it out of my life. I didn't know about it.
What's and this thing called church?
Yeah, yeah. We never. I mean, I can. We might have gone to Sunday school with a neighbor, maybe, but I don't really remember it. And then we went. We started going to a church that our grandfather helped pastor, and it was a very charismatic church, great people, and it was all African Americans except for our family. But as a little kid, I was completely colorblind. I just knew that those kids were fun to play with, and
they're just friends.
Yeah, yeah. And even going to once we moved to Kent, we started going to a church that was actually a baby church, and we started there, and that was more like our second family, and it wasn't real off the wall. It was very family oriented and very close, very biblical, but it wasn't over the top fundamental at all until they started going to the Bill Gothard seminar.
That was it.
And that was the turning point, and that going there destroyed that church.
And it destroyed a lot of lives.
It just absolutely destroyed
in the process.
Lives. Yeah.
So strange, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. I saw kids that I'd gone to Sunday school with as a 5, 6, 7, 8 year old child. Suddenly we were all being abused physically, and we all changed. Nobody talked about it though. I never
exactly.
told anybody that I was being physically abused, emotionally abused, verbally abused at home. None of us had ever experienced that before. We were just innocent children, but it took away our innocence, and it was life changing. And I can see all down the line, every kid that I went to Sunday school with, then youth group with, we fell apart mentally and emotionally, but none of us knew why.
Exactly.
Know?
Now it's the new reality. And that's mm-hmm. what's so strange yeah. about our different, we have almost like two different upbringings, even though we had basically the same parents mm-hmm. at home.
Mm-hmm.
You were, it was a shock to come into the system
yeah.
at a certain point. Whereas mm-hmm. for me, I was just,
you didn't know
that's
any,
all I knew.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just
different.
Told parents know best and
mm-hmm.
the kid has to be spanked.
Yeah.
And my
yeah.
sister Beth and I, we got thousands of spankings.
Yeah. yeah.
And the weird
yeah.
thing was, the more spankings we got, the naughtier we were,
yeah.
you know. And I remember yeah. getting in trouble for lighting fires out in the forest and
yep.
on and on and on. And we
yeah.
just kept sneaking in and stealing matches. And we'd go back and light later that same day, light another fire, and we'd get another spanking. And
oh, why not?
So the theology wasn't very good. The
yeah.
theory didn't work.
Nope.
Break the child's will.
Yeah.
They broke many of a stick over our backsides,
yeah.
I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, when you're wearing out a piece
yeah.
of kindling
yeah.
to beat a child four, yeah. 4, 5, 6 times a day.
Yeah, yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Or using a drumstick
yeah.
on a child.
That's unbelievable. Maybe that's why I became a drummer. Instead
yeah.
of instead of beating, I can beat the drums
that's
instead
horrible.
Of beating some kid. That is horrible. I can take it out on the drums
yeah.
and they'll just, you know, come back for more. But yeah,
yeah.
so we're raised in this bizarre environment.
Yeah.
Then for me, I of course talk about this, I think, in the last podcast, was that the theology of the church that we were raised in
mm-hmm.
really messed me up, because mm-hmm. they taught that you had to be baptized to become a Christian.
Right.
So I did get baptized when I was 10, but that somehow didn't take.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
all I did was get wet, basically.
Yeah.
So at 13, I come back and I told the pastor, I'm a miserable failure. I'm struggling here.
Oh,
I was,
sad.
I was torturing myself with
mm-hmm.
all the self-doubt and the loathing, and I'm not a Christian. I'm probably going to miss the rapture after we saw A Thief in the Night, the
mm-hmm.
film. And
oh, yeah.
then I got baptized again at 13.
Gotta make sure.
Then I got baptized again when I was in Bible college.
Mm-hmm.
So I was baptized 3 times. You know, so
just kept not taking.
Yeah. The formula wasn't right. And that's
yeah.
basically what the
yeah.
second guy said. It was a different pastor that we had by then. And he said, well, maybe they didn't do it right. Maybe they didn't
yeah.
get the formula right. They didn't pronounce the Trinity correctly or whatever.
That's so ridiculous.
And so, yeah. But the emotional trauma.
Yeah.
I can
yeah.
remember
you feel
crying
like such
out.
A failure.
Yeah. In
mm-hmm.
my room.
Yeah.
At night.
Yeah.
Convinced, terrified
mm-hmm.
that I was going to miss the rapture, that
yeah.
I was going to hell.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really a Christian, and
mm-hmm.
I'm 12, 13, carrying
yeah.
this around.
Yeah, the spear.
And trauma and mm-hmm. emotional damage.
Well, and shame that's still too. With me. Yeah, and oh, shame yeah, too, because you think, what am I doing wrong? I'm doing something wrong. You know, I'm a failure, but you're a little kid.
Just a kid.
Yeah, you should be able to just be an innocent child. And we didn't get that. That was robbed from us.
It was taken away from us, really, and added a whole lot of psychological trauma and, like you say, loathing and fear and shame and so mm-hmm. many negative things. Yeah,
guilt.
Guilt. Yeah. Yeah. You know, God's disappointed with you mm-hmm. and you're not living up to his standards.
Yeah.
And you could, I never could seem to make it work. So when I was about 16, 17, I just said, I'm going to pack the whole thing in. If anyone asks me, are you a Christian? I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
And that's, I went for about 5-6 years like that until my early 20s. And then I kind of got dragged into a church mm-hmm. by some, I was playing in a Christian metal band actually at the time, but I wasn't a Christian.
Yeah.
And these friends said, hey, you're our drummer. Are you even a Christian?
Oh, no.
I said, no.
Wasn't on your resume.
You can't be in a Christian metal band if you're not a Christian. So they started dragging me to their church, and I got saved, as it were, one night at a service. But then I didn't get baptized.
Oh, no.
So then
you only did half your job.
I only did half the job. I felt really bad about it because then I went off to Bible college and seminary, and then I was a youth pastor. And I felt really convicted that I'm pastoring these kids, mm-hmm. but I'm not baptized. So I went to the pastor and I had this big kind of breakdown. And I was like, I didn't want to admit it. I thought he was going to fire me.
Oh, no.
I really did. I thought, God, I'm carrying this secret around. Oh, I'm going to admit to this guy, confess to him. Listen, I'm a pastor here, but I've never been baptized. Well, I have been mm-hmm. baptized twice, but before I was a Christian. And he was pretty cool about it. So he got me baptized in front of the youth group. In a river. So we did it that way, you know, sort of a teaching moment was what it was.
Right.
You know, so that was my third and final baptism. But imagine carrying that around.
I know.
Till you're mid-20s now, 27, 20. I'm married. I got a family.
Yeah.
Going to Bible college. I'm going to be a minister, blah, blah, blah. And I'm dragging this crap around childhood.
Yeah, it's a ball
still.
And chain.
It's a ball and chain. Unbelievable.
I never got rebaptized, but I couldn't tell you how many times I rededicated my life.
Oh, yeah. We all did it.
And the pastor would call at the end of the sermon, if anybody wants to come forward and rededicate their lives or be baptized, you know, please come forward now. You know, I kept doing that. I don't know how many times
I did
do that. And if I didn't do it physically, I was doing it in my head because I was too shy to go up in front.
Well, it would be a shameful thing too, because mm-hmm. you're supposed mm-hmm. to be a Christian, aren't
right.
you? You're in this church, you've been raised in it or born, you got into it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So why am I going forward? I don't need to go forward.
Yeah.
But in your heart of hearts, you're like,
oh no,
maybe I should just to be sure.
I'll just raise my hand when they say it.
I'll raise my hand.
Just don't leave your seat. Just raise your hand.
Well, and remember the one manipulation tactic where every head bowed, every eye mm-hmm. is closed.
Yes.
No one's looking.
Nobody looking. Yeah.
But you can raise your hand.
Yes.
And then
only God sees it.
Yeah, only God and the pastor, of course.
Yeah.
The pastor and God.
He's
can
taking
see
notes.
It. And I don't know how many times I raised my hand.
I know.
Thinking, I'm safe. No one is gonna look.
Yeah.
So I'll go ahead and raise my hand, I'll rededicate my life and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Just to be sure.
Well, and I was terrified before every communion. When you take communion, they always say, you know, search your heart.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure that you don't have any hidden sin. And I would just sit there, you know, until it was my turn to take the communion tray. Okay, what did I do this week?
What have I done?
Is there anything? Well, I'll just pray a prayer of forgiveness just in case.
A blanket prayer.
Yeah, just blanket prayer.
If I missed anything.
Yeah. Something way down deep that I forgot, you know. I maybe told the kids that we were out of ice cream. You know,
you
when
lied
we,
to
I
them.
Know, I know. And we
How can
really
you live
aren't.
With yourself?
I know.
Especially ice
Sunday
cream.
Sunday morning. No, I was okay because Sunday morning I confessed that sin of lying and I was covered and so I could take communion. So I was good.
Yep. You were good. You were covered. But it's amazing. The more we've thought about and talked about this whole idea of how pervasive it was mm-hmm. and is still that every decision, I was talking to David Hayward about this, every decision that I made had to be filtered through
mm-hmm,
a lens of, is this God's will for mm-hmm, my life? Is it biblical?
Yeah.
And I can remember I preached sermons on this, trying to help people figure out how do you make decisions?
Mm-hmm.
How do you make decisions?
Right.
You're going to change your job. Who are you going to marry? Where are you going to live? What are you going to do with your life? And you have to pray about it. And it's a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
What's the will? What's God's will?
Yeah.
I don't know. he's not going to write it on the wall in letters mm-hmm. of fire. Mm-hmm. So if it's not in the Bible, what do you do with this whole thing of God's will? And mm-hmm. I was agonizing over this stuff. To the point where, we were talking about people can become paralyzed, can't they?
Oh, yeah.
They can't move. Do anything. They won't do anything until they know for sure if it's a yes or a no.
Yeah, yeah.
But who can figure this stuff out?
Well, and one of the pet phrases for Christians is, well, if God closes a door, he opens a window. Well, maybe you're supposed to go through the window from the beginning.
In the first place. And maybe there's no door or window.
Or window.
Oh. Think outside the box. Or as the Elevation Church, think inside the box. Yes, we were reading the code orange the Elevation Church the other day, trying to make sense of this.
Yeah, it didn't make any sense.
And one of the things was, we eat the fish and leave the bones.
Yeah.
We're still trying to figure out what that means. But one of the ones was, embrace your limitations.
Oh, yes.
Because that's where creativity comes from.
Oh, yes.
And we're thinking, what?
What?
Why would you want to embrace your limitation? And how's that biblical, godly? This is nuts. The stuff that they're teaching people in these evangelical churches.
Teaching children at the color books.
That was the other thing
that they had.
We saw their coloring books. This Elevation Church giving their kids, the church made these coloring books, showing the pastor and the kids can color it in. And it said something about unity, that God has given the vision to Pastor Stephen, and we will defend that unity at all costs. Aggressively.
Yes.
Their value statement said we will aggressively defend the vision that God gave to Pastor Stephen Furtick.
What? Yeah, they're messing up on complete other generation.
A whole new generation.
A whole new generation.
So we were messed up.
Yep.
And now they're doing it again.
Yeah.
It's very cult-like. It's very cultic. Look at that kind of stuff. It's very controlling, celebrity pastor kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, that wasn't the church experience we had in terms of the celebrity pastor thing.
Yeah.
But man, talk about, being messed up as kids. Mm-hmm. And then you can't just disentangle yourself from that life. That was our identity.
Right.
For me, my whole adult life was spent either in academic education, biblical education, seminary, whatever, pastoring and teaching. Mm-hmm. So for the last 20 years, that's what I've been doing.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And I look back and I think, what the hell?
Yeah, I know. I wasted a lot of years when my kids were growing up. Mike and I were youth leaders. We were unpaid. We were volunteer youth leaders. And we did that for years and years and years. From the time our daughter started junior high, and our son, we just brought our son along. He wasn't in junior high yet. But we were involved in youth leaders for years and years. And I have since actually apologized to both my kids to say, I'm really sorry that, you know, we brought you up in this. And they're like, Mom, we don't care. Don't worry about it. You know,
we're fine.
Luckily. You let us make our own decisions spiritually. And neither one of them are involved in the church. And I'm really glad because now my daughter's bringing up her kids to let them make their own decisions.
Yeah,
and
that's huge.
It is. It's really huge. And she said, Mom, that's the payback, you know, for our kids to be able to grow up independent of religion and the guilt and the shame and the humiliation, they're free of it. And I'm so happy.
It's amazing.
I'm really happy about that.
It's the ultimate irony. The whole thing is so ironic that church is supposed to be this safe place where you can go to meet with God and you can become a better person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yet, as we've said so many times, Christians can be the most judgmental, hate-filled, nasty, horrible people.
Oh, yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Terrible. Yeah.
The kind of stuff that we've had to deal with from our family members, as you say.
Yeah.
Going back to this nonsense with our parents and all that went on. We have a certain sister who's quite a fundamentalist even still.
Yeah.
She's certainly disowned me. I don't know
She
hasn't disowned you yet.
Not yet. I think probably part of it too is the fact that she and I are full sisters.
That's
and
true.
The other four of you are half. So she's hung on to that. I mean, I don't delineate personally.
We're just brothers and sisters.
Yeah, we're just brothers and sisters. But I think that's part of it. I know that she is. I feel like she's frozen she can't really do anything. She doesn't have the freedom to do anything just to make a decision.
Yeah. Paralyzed.
It's
gotta find out what God's
anything.
Will is.
Yeah. From the time she wakes up in the morning, she's praying for certain decisions to be made for her that day. But if you want to ask her, hey, you want to do something? Well, I got to pray about it. Well, how about just let's go to lunch?
First, we got to pray.
We got to pray about it and see if I've got, if that's God's will for me today to do that. Or should I be doing something else?
Something more godly?
Yeah, yeah.
Stay home and read my Bible?
Yeah. It's just kind of weird. So I don't pursue a lot of time with her, which is sad because she's my sister at the same time. But I just, I almost feel like I have PTSD from,
well, we do.
Yeah, from the religion that's been pounded into our heads.
Yeah, it
is. And so pervasive in our lives that whenever I even drive past a church, I just get like angry almost.
Yeah, it's triggering.
And,
very triggering.
It's very triggering. I was driving with my grandsons in the car the other day and we passed, a church that was doing a vacation Bible school, and they had a big banner proclaiming this vacation Bible school, bring your kids to vacation Bible school. And it just instantly pissed me off seeing that, because I'm thinking they're indoctrinating the next generation and the next and the next and the next.
Through fun and games.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is fun.
It is. They make it fun.
You get to go play games and get your Kool-Aid and drink your Kool-Aid and have your snacks and cookies.
Yeah.
And here comes the sermon.
Yes.
About how you're going to hell. And,
yeah. Yeah.
And you're laying that on a whole generation.
Children. And I'm so thankful. Last year, my daughter said to the boys, they'd gotten invited to a vacation Bible school by the neighbor girl. And they're like, oh, yeah, we'll check it out. Something to do in the summer. And they've had games and Kool-Aid and cookies. So they went to it, and I don't think they went the whole week. They only went for a couple of days, and they came home, and they were saying, Mom, this is so boring.
So
bad. We don't want to go anymore.
Lucky for them.
I know.
It's so strange. When you were talking about our sister, I was thinking that this whole thing about how for so many Christians, evangelicals, fundamentalists, that doctrine and correct beliefs will trump relationships.
Yeah. Oh,
and
absolutely.
They'll happily break or destroy a relationship with someone else as long as they can walk away and say, well, I was right.
Yeah.
And I remember when I was a kid, going back to when we were growing up in church, I had my friend, his name was Guy, and I just met him at high school, and he went to a different church than us. And he came over to stay at our house. The first time he came over to stay, we were probably, I don't know, 13, 14, around that age. And we took him to church on a Sunday at our church. Now, our church didn't believe in the gift of tongues, and they said all that had ceased at the end of the first century, blah, blah, blah. Well, Guy's church was a charismatic church.
Oh.
They believed in tongues and miracles and healings and miraculous things like that. Well, the pastor had said something to that effect in the service. I didn't remember what he said, but Guy was really upset by that.
Oh, no.
So on the way home in the car, Guy and I got into this huge argument. I mean, we're 13, 14 years old, arguing over whether or not tongues is really legitimate for today. And we got into this huge fight in the back of the car. When we got back to our house, it was pouring down rain, and Guy disappeared. And I thought he'd just gone into another room or something. And suddenly, after about an hour, we realized he wasn't in the house anymore.
Oh, no.
He actually got his coat on and went to walk home. Now, he lived about 15 miles from, it was a long ways.
Just
and it was pouring down rain.
Oh.
And our dad realized that he'd gone. And so he got in the car and drove all around and finally found him. He had gone about 5 miles from the house.
No.
He was soaked to the bone.
Oh.
And he brought him back home. And I mean, we apologized at this big argument. You know, you think, okay, that I was at that age, well, both of us, we're willing
each
to
of you.
Destroy
yeah.
our relationship over this argument over tongues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Unbelievable.
But you feel so strongly about it.
Just so important.
Oh, and nobody's going to talk you out of it.
He felt just as strong.
Absolutely.
And we had a huge fight over it, and we ended up patching it up. Luckily, I think our parents kind of sat us down, and they were like, now, guys, we can work this out somehow. And we did. We stayed friends for a long time. We were great. We became very, very close.
Yeah.
But, here we are 13, 14 years old, falling out over something so trivial, seemingly.
And
wasn't trivial, though.
No,
at
not
that
at
time.
The time, yeah. And the sad thing is that not only friends, but family members.
Exactly.
If you don't go to church, I know I've heard you talk about friends that, you know, are very sick, and because they don't go to church, their parents won't have anything to do with them.
It's true. They won't even come visit.
That's heartbreaking. That's your child.
Yeah.
You know, or your brother, or your sister. It just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, it would take a lot for me to write somebody out of my life. And I've had to do that we've had to do it because of their religious convictions or whatever
it was.
The toxicity and the negativity.
Yeah, it's come back so much.
It has.
That's when I had to cut it off because for a long time I tried to be the peacemaker. I tried to get people to talk to each other and it kept blowing up in my face and coming back on me. And then the attacks started on me and I'm going, whoa, I'm the good guy here. Yeah, I thought I was. I'm trying to help. I'm not attacking you, but you're attacking me. And it was negative, negative, negative. And finally one sister said, the trouble all started in 1966. Well, that was the year I was born. So when I heard that, I thought, okay, you've been angry with me since I was born.
And it's all your fault.
It's all my fault. So I just said, I can't do this anymore. And as we said, that was for me the most emotionally healthy thing to do was to walk away and cut those relationships off. And I care about them. I love them still. Mm-hmm. They're my family. Yeah. I can never change that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I can't be in a relationship with some people that I'm related to.
And it's very sad too. And for us too, we've had several generations on the maternal side of our family and paternal side too, both. People that called themselves Christians were so negative and emotionally abusive to their children and their children and their children. And it just was perpetuating abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse. But yet they all called themselves Christians.
How can they be so unloving?
I know, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. But they're so, this thing about fundamentalism is for sure, it's all about control.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of it is cloaked in this patriarchy.
Yeah.
You've got a male pastor. Mm-hmm. They're very anti-women.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Women can't be leaders in most conservative churches. They can't preach.
Yeah.
I think I've told the story about when I was a pastor, we had a rotation of preachers. And about every 6 or 8 weeks, you'd preach about every 6, 8 weeks. And we had a team. And one of these people on the team was this woman, and she would preach. And we had a guy in our church who was a total fundamentalist, and he would write us a letter, a 6 to 8 page handwritten.
Oh, no.
He wouldn't even type it out. He would handwrite it, going through all the biblical verses why she shouldn't be allowed to teach men or preach in the church. So that's just a kind of standard stock conservative view of women for sure.
Oh yeah.
Very
yeah.
negative, as
yeah.
you say.
Yeah.
So how's the negativity? How's it affected you? You were saying this is something you really wanted to get into in this podcast.
Yeah. I think a lot of it too was when Mike and I were doing youth group leadership. Yeah. New word. Leadership that I wasn't allowed to do it just by myself. I could be under Mike.
Yes, under his authority. The umbrella of authority.
Yeah, and he had to be there physically. You know, and that was that was in the 90s that Mike and I were doing that when our kids were in school. So I felt like second-class citizen, and they always talked about how women should dress, but they never talked about how men should dress.
No, they never did.
And how you can't front hug someone, you could side hug someone. You know, it's like, come on, who's hung up on the sexual problems here? It's not me.
It's not the women, apparently.
It's not the women. It's these guys are making all the rules. And it was just too much. But fortunately, I've got such a great husband because Mike and I have always been equals, and he's always treated me as equal. And if anybody's offended me or tried to lash out at me or hurt me in any way, he championed me.
Yeah, he didn't throw you under the bus.
No, not at all. I remember one time I was teaching something in youth group, and I had a small group. I think they were high school kids. And we were talking about some items in the Old Testament. And someone had told their parents that I was teaching about this. I was talking about giants, what they talk about it in the Old Testament.
Oh, yeah.
And this parent called the pastor and said, Valerie's teaching It's all lies. There's nothing like that in the Bible. She's teaching my kid lies.
Heresy.
Yeah. And so the pastor called me. I was at my office and Mike happened to be in my office and the pastor didn't know that.
Fortunate timing.
Yeah. So I put the call on speakerphone because I didn't know why it was calling me. I just thought maybe he's calling to see how I was or something. But no, he started yelling at me and telling me that I was teaching heresy and that there was nothing about giants in the Bible. And I was also teaching about there's a waiting place where I think it's Abraham and Lot or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Abraham's bosom.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, and I was teaching parable. I was teaching about that too. And he just came unglued at me. And Mike was just sitting there, just his jaw just on
open.
The floor.
Whoa.
How can you dare to talk to my wife like that? And the pastor called me a liar. And how dare you do that? And you're not fit to teach our kids. And maybe you should resign. And I said, well, what about Mike? Oh, no, he's fine.
He's fine. He hasn't taught heresy yet.
Yeah. And Mike is just sitting there just steaming. And so finally I ended up hanging up and Mike jumped in his car, drove to the church. But by the time he got to the church, the pastor had left for lunch or something.
Probably lucky for him.
Very lucky for him because Mike was ready to beat the crap out of that guy.
Yeah.
For how dare you talk to my wife like she's a second class citizen, that she's unfit to teach kids. I'd been doing it for years.
Well, not giving you the benefit of the doubt at all. He didn't ask you what exactly were you
verse
teaching?
And chapter. Yeah.
Where did you get this? What's this about?
Yeah.
Let's assume that you're maybe misguided at the very best. I don't know.
Just
launch right in.
Yeah, it was really frustrating because then Mike and I, once Mike cooled off, we called and made an appointment to go in and see him and actually talk to him so that I could defend myself. Because Mike said, you are not going by yourself.
You're not taking that. Yeah, and you're not going to take it by yourself.
No. And
no
so
way.
The two of us went into his office, and he would not listen to me. And I had chapter and verse. I said, here it is. I'm preaching right out of the Bible, and I'm not making this stuff up, okay? And he's like, oh, I don't want to hear it from you. You know, you need to think about resigning. And so shortly after that, both Mike and I just said, we're done.
You did think about it.
Yeah, we thought about it and we said, we're done. And by that time, our kids had kind of decided that they were done too. And they stopped going to youth group just on their own. And we're like, yeah, you know, whatever you guys want to do, we'll support you. But it was just, it was really so off, out of left field, how he treated us. And then we got into the discussion about whether baptism saves you or not. And we tried to talk to him about that too. And he just would not listen. He'd rather yell at us than listen to us.
What
so,
a great leader.
Yeah. I mean,
just on
it
a,
wasn't
on
a safe
human
place.
Level.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not not a safe place to sit and actually have a discussion.
No.
You
no.
can't have those kind of discussions.
Nope.
And we've said it many times for so many evangelicals, their whole faith, it's a carefully constructed house of cards.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that's why it's, they have to protect it at all costs.
Yeah, absolutely.
So whatever their theological beliefs are, if you challenge them on anything.
Yeah, anything.
It's far too threatening. The implications are too huge.
Yeah.
Because the whole thing will come crashing down.
Yeah, absolutely. You question anything.
Anything.
In any minute detail. The color of the pews. You know?
Well, I remember going to see the elders at our church in Chester here in the UK years ago when we were still there because this woman had preached about the gift of tongues. Now here it is, tongues again. I was thinking about my friend Guy again. Mm-hmm. What would Guy say? But I didn't care. It wasn't about the fact that she was a woman. It was that she basically said, her point was, every Christian must speak in tongues.
Oh,
and in fact, if you haven't spoken in tongues, you're probably not a Christian. And I was like, okay. At the time, I had a real problem with that because I thought, wait a minute, there's a lot of competing points of view on this, and I've studied this a lot. I've even preached and taught on this subject. So I went to the elders and I had this conversation about, can't you represent other points of view? That's one point of view.
Yeah.
That's one theological possibility, but there are some others as well. And they didn't want to know.
Hmm.
They said, we're fine with what she said. We think she's right.
Oh, wow.
And we hear you, but we're not going to change anything.
Huh.
And it was, that was one of the last straws for me.
Yeah. They teach that there's so many other gifts.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to just speak in tongues. Maybe healing. Maybe you have a gift of healing.
But make it exclusive.
Yeah, and that's not right.
Yeah, we tried to go through the scriptural verses and all that, blah, blah, blah. They didn't want to know.
Yeah.
They just kind of poo-pooed the whole thing. They said, yeah, we've heard all that before, but we think she was right. And that's kind of our position. And we had been there 6 years and we said, really? We've been here 6 years. I knew it was a real charismatic church and stuff, but we didn't know it was that extreme.
Right.
You're not even a Christian if you've never spoken in tongues. And I guess I was
never a Christian then.
You're not. Yeah, I guess not. And I wasn't either. I never spoke in tongues either.
Yeah.
So it's just, that they're willing to say to you, bye bye.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you want to go on down the road, there's another church down the street that doesn't believe the way we do.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah. You got to find out where you fit.
Where you fit.
I meant
where
time,
your theology fits.
When our kids are really little, Mike and I went to this church for a short time. It was a four square and they believed in speaking in tongues very heavily. And I had the kids sitting on the pew with me, and the pastor's wife started going into these crazy tongues. And then a bunch of other people in the congregation started doing it. My son, he was maybe 3 at the time. He started crying, scared.
Scared to death.
And
What's happening here?
My daughter, she's about 5. She's like, Mom, what? They're whispering, what is going on? What's going on? And I could just get that negative energy from my kids that they were terrified. So I quickly took them out into the back of the church, and we just went outside and played. But I told Mike later, I said, I do not want to go to this church. If it's something that's frightening my children when they're 3 and 5, there's something there. I don't know if
something's
there's a
right.
spirit of evil. I just didn't know. But I said, I don't want to be a part of that. It's too freaky.
Certainly chaotic as a young child. If it's scaring a poor kid of 3 and 5, that's a bit strange.
That's not right.
It?
Yeah.
Well, how would you say that walking away from church and possibly Christianity itself, how has that changed your worldview? How has it changed your relationships with others? Because we were saying the other day that it's because religion's so all pervasive, it affected the way we viewed relationships with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every person that we met was a prospective person to proselytize.
Yeah, right, right.
And so I can remember every new person I met was, I'm thinking, how can I build a relationship with him or her for the purpose of telling them the gospel?
Yeah.
And that has completely changed for me. Mm-hmm. I don't view people as potential converts.
Yeah. Oh, me too.
And that's
Absolutely.
Huge. I can just be friends with people.
Yeah.
They're just people. I can get to know them. They can get to know me. And I don't have an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember feeling so much guilt and shame if I didn't somehow get the gospel message across.
Right, right.
Or at least let them know that I was a Christian at some point very early on in the conversation or something.
And to find out if they were Christians.
Yeah.
That was very paramount. Yeah.
Yeah. And if they weren't a Christian, then it was all about thinking, how can we build a relationship so I can earn the right to preach the gospel? And I can remember preaching sermons on this and telling people, teaching people how to do this.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, wow, this is so pervasive. It's affected every, and you have to stop and think about it and go, okay, I don't have to do that anymore.
Right, right.
What's changed for you? How would you say it's changed your relationships and everything, really?
Well, I think partly that I totally agree, because I was the same way. And another part to that, too, I felt like I couldn't trust anyone who wasn't a Christian. And so I would distrust everybody until I found out if they're a Christian. Then I can trust you. You're a Christian. But then those very same people ended up hurting me terribly.
They're the ones who burn you the most.
Yeah. The people that call themselves Christian.
So true.
So I'm able to look at everybody just as people. Everybody has the same struggles. Everybody's got their own walk. I can trust people now. And that was the biggest thing for me. And also not to, I constantly felt like I had to measure up to this God ruler and live my life, be a good person all the time and put across this Christian attitude.
You got to be joyful.
Yeah, got to be joyful and happy. But
rejoice
really inside,
in the Lord always.
You
have to be happy.
And inside, I was miserable. I was on antidepressants. I was on anti-anxiety medication. I had terrible, terrible depression for decades. And my poor husband, oh my God.
What he put up
with. He put up with, yeah. I just, oh my God, I love him so much because he put up with that. And I mean, I would have nervous breakdowns almost, anxiety, panic attacks.
Yeah, you're carrying because all I'm this carrying that. Trauma,
but yet,
anxiety.
I'm teaching youth group.
Yep.
At the same time.
You're a mess, but you're
I'm
supposed to be a
total mess.
Leadering these kids.
Yeah. And I had a lot of empathy for these kids because I could really feel their pain and the things they were going through. And I got to be really, really close with a lot of my kids in youth group. And even some of them still today, I'm friends with on Facebook because I just kept in touch with them. And a lot of it, too, is because I was going through, I was so messed up that I didn't judge other people from when they were going through bad times. And one of our high school girls ended up getting pregnant. Actually, two or three of them did. And so I mentored those girls. And those girls, I'm still friends with them. I'm still friends with their parents because I walked in their shoes.
Oh, yeah.
I could I had all the empathy in the world for those girls. And I remember just sitting and talking to them for hours, meeting with their parents. And my husband ran into one of their dads just a few days ago. Said, "Hey, how are you? I haven't seen you in a long time. And how are you? How's your daughter? How's your grandson?" And they're doing great. All these decades later. And, you know, so I can really feel like, you know, I've just been able to walk away from religion has really, really freed me. I've gotten rid of all the shame and the guilt and the just depression, and it's gone from my life. And another thing you and I've been talking about is I've been doing these meditation podcasts. They're just called meditation podcasts. But it has really freed me from the generational guilt and shame and emotional abuse that we've suffered. And it's completely freed me of that. And I feel like my brain is empty, and I get to fill it up with good stuff.
Fill it up with positivity.
Yeah. I'm 60. I can't waste any more time.
You don't have much time left, Al.
I know.
One foot in the grave, the other foot on a banana peel. Man, you're right there. It's so true. I can remember when you were talking about leadering these kids. When I was a pastor, I felt so much of the same thing. Mm-hmm. Because when you're in leadership in church ministry, I've often said it's one of the most lonely places you can be because they put you up on a pedestal and they look up to you. Mm-hmm. And yet they're always criticizing everything you do.
Yeah, right.
It's a weird thing.
Yeah.
But I can remember preaching sermons about how people need to be reading their Bibles more and praying more and evangelizing their friends, their coworkers, their neighbors, their relatives. And yet I was doing none of those things myself.
Yeah.
And so I always felt like I knew I was a fraud. And I knew I was certainly letting the church down, and I was absolutely letting God down, as you said. Mm-hmm. I always carried this shame and guilt. It was a secret thing, and you couldn't confess it to anybody.
No.
The only one I could ever talk to, I had a friend of mine who was also a pastor at another church across town, and we'd get together for breakfast every Thursday morning. He'd come pick me up, and we could at least talk about some of our struggles. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't tell that to anybody in the church.
Yeah.
I admitted that I was a fraud, I was always afraid that they were going to fire me.
Yeah.
They were going to say, "You're a phony."
Yeah.
And so there's this imposter syndrome going on all the time. And you're carrying that. You're carrying the shame, the guilt, the anxiety, the trauma. I mean, God, no wonder we were a mess.
I know. And like Mike said years ago, he said that the church is the only place that shoots their wounded.
It's true.
And it's really true. I mean, Mike and I could have never gone to the pastor to say, "Hey, Val's struggling with depression. She's on anti-anxiety medication. She's on antidepressants." We could have never done that.
Well, a lot of places would have told you to get out.
Because absolutely.
You're not supposed to be on medication.
Yeah.
That's not a godly thing.
Yeah.
You're supposed to pray, and God's going to heal you. God's going to fix your problems or counsel yourself from the Bible and whatever. So some people will even say, "Yeah, you shouldn't take medication.
Mm-hmm.
It's against the Bible."
And so
Bible,
that adds another
God's
level.
Will.
Yeah, and it adds another level of shame and guilt because you need this medication.
Yeah, if it's
but
a
yet
chemical
you know,
imbalance.
Yeah, you know, spiritually, oh my God, I'm not supposed to be taking this stuff. But it wasn't until I got away from the church that I was able to get off the medication.
How ironic.
That's very ironic.
There's just so many ironies in this whole thing.
I mean, Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's heartbreaking because I feel I've wasted, you know, about 50 years of my life since I was about 10 when I accepted Christ. And I got baptized too, right away.
Yeah, but I got Sunday. Baptized three times.
Yeah, so you're ahead of me.
I'm ahead of you by two.
Yeah, yeah.
At least.
Well, I'm behind the eight ball.
You're lagging.
Yeah. But it was just when I left the church that this huge feeling of peace came into my life. Gigantic.
So ironic.
And all these feelings are gone. They're completely gone out of my head. I could just live every day of my life. Get up in the morning and all I get to do is look outside. Okay, what am I going to do today? If it's raining, I'm going to stay inside and do something inside. If it's nice, I'm going to go hiking or kayaking or bicycling, whatever. But not before. I would have had to pray about it.
Yeah.
You know, what's God's will? Yeah. And I would be terrified to do these things because maybe God wasn't really with me because I'm not going to church. You know?
Well, and you didn't ask your husband's permission.
Oh, yeah.
You're out from that umbrella of his protection.
Yeah, yeah.
So as long as he approves of it, you're okay.
Yeah, I didn't ask his permission. I just said, hey, Mike, I'm going to go hiking. He says, okay.
see you later. Make sure you have your phone and everything else.
Yep.
It's unbelievable. I remember when I was in Bible college, I can't remember if I shared the story on our last podcast, but when I was in Bible college, one of the first days I was there, this woman, her husband went away on a business trip, part of this conference thing. And so she was asked to come in and teach this class, just the one session while he was on this conference. And she came in and she was teaching about the role of women in missions, the history of women in missions, you know, going back to the 19th century and all this. Well, as soon as she started talking, this one guy raised his hand and said, excuse me, you're not supposed to be teaching us because we have men in here and you're a woman. And, you know, this just like you say, the negativity. And yet he was right. According to his view, she wasn't supposed to be teaching the men in the classroom because it was against the Bible. And she had to go through this whole explanation. And you know, her explanation was, she said, well, I'm here because I'm under my husband's authority because he asked me to teach the class and he's under the president of the school's authority and he knows I'm here. So it's all okay. And that pacified the guy. So her answer was actually a bullshit answer, really.
Yeah.
She kind of pandered to him and he accepted that.
And she shouldn't have had to.
And yet she was under the gun straight away.
This is crazy.
You know, so that's the kind of environment that we were raised in, that we lived our whole lives in, as you say. I hate to say it, put a lot of other people when we were in leadership positions, but we were just doing the best we thought we knew how.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
At the time.
Right. But, and I think it also affects America because America comes under the quote unquote Christian Judeo belief system.
Yeah.
And
it's a Christian nation.
Yeah. And it's held women down for centuries. And I think it still does because there's so many fundamental churches that there's still that mindset that, first of all, women aren't equal. And then if you're homosexual, you are definitely not
equal.
Yeah, you're definitely not
going
equal.
To hell for sure.
Exactly. And, or if you're bi, whatever, they have this patriarchal system still today. It's just, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's 2018. Identifying your gender role. There's only male and only female.
Yeah.
Those two can be together, but there's no, there are no other categories outside of those two.
Yeah.
So if you don't fit those two,
you're not gonna
fit in here
and
you're probably on your way to hell.
Yeah.
Someone said, I think it was Andrew Jasko on one of the podcasts we did earlier. He said that even if you weren't raised in church in America, for sure, you have been affected by religion. As you say, it's all pervasive in the society because the religious right has influenced legislation to make it
a
quote Christian nation.
Yes.
So everyone's been affected by religious conservatism or even liberalism as well.
Yeah.
It's not just the fundamentalist.
Yeah.
You can be just as fundamentalist and be a liberal as you can a conservative. So it's not Westboro Baptist Church type of people only. Those guys are on the fringe far right. But there's some nuts out there on the far
left.
You
look at the Bible Belt, for decades, they voted as Democrats.
Oh, yeah. They were liberal Democrats.
Yeah. But their home values with their women and their families is that same patriarchal attitude.
Yeah.
The women and the children were second class citizens.
Well, and then you had slaves below that.
Yeah.
In the South.
I mean, it goes way back. I mean, I know that you and I, when we were growing up, I felt like I was a slave. And I even said that to our mom one time, and she slapped me across the face.
I'm but surprised it's like, that didn't go down too well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just felt like that we were. I mean, it was like, I think I even said something like, the reason you had six kids is because you wanted six slaves. And yeah,
whoops.
That was, yeah, that didn't go over well at all.
I can't imagine
but
why.
But I just felt like that. And we were told we didn't have an opinion, that we were stupid. I mean, I just got that pounded in my head.
How can that not affect you?
Yeah, yeah.
In so many ways.
Yeah.
That's your life script, isn't it?
As
you go on into your life,
yeah,
you are told, you're thinking, well, I'm probably pretty stupid.
Yeah.
I don't have an opinion. I don't have a voice.
Yeah.
I can't say anything, so I'm not going to say anything.
Yep.
How can that be considered a, quote, Christian upbringing? And yet they would say that's
the way
that
it is.
Is a Christian upbringing.
Yeah.
The parents know best. This is a God-ordained system.
Yeah.
The whole umbrella protection nonsense.
Yeah. Well, and the weird thing, too, is that my husband was not raised like that. And so he would say, what do you think, Val, about something? Whatever you want to do, hon, you know, whatever you want to do is fine with me. And they go, no, I want to know, what do you think about such and such? And it was just weird because I just felt like, you mean I have an opinion in this decision? You know, whatever you want to do, honey, it's fine with me.
Yeah,
but he would push me.
Yeah.
And he would push me until I finally say, well, you know, I really don't like it. But even then, if I said, well, I don't like X or Y or whatever, I was afraid that he would beat me.
Right. He would come down on you.
Yeah. I mean, emotionally, I just like was ready to get hit. And it was
already cringing.
Yeah. I mean, he never laid a hand on me, but it was because that's how our mom did it. That if we disagreed with her, she would immediately hit us, whether it was a spanking or slap us across the face or, you know, rip out a bunch of our hair, whatever. I mean, that's just the way she was. And so I had this ingrained reaction. Okay, I'm going to give my opinion, but I better duck.
Better watch out.
Because
here comes the slap or the fist.
Yeah, but Mike he's like, yeah, you know, I love your opinion. I value your opinion. I want to know what you think. And it took years and years for me to get over it. And that was another form of PTSD.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was ready for that physical abuse that our mom and our dad really had given us. It was just like ingrained in me that I knew something terrible, or that he was going to leave me, tell me to
something
get out of the
happen.
House. Yeah. I always was terrified. Yeah.
But yet, as we said last year in our podcast, we think that the problem with the parents was the fact that before they went into the Bill Gothard stuff, they were pretty complimentary toward each other.
Yes.
But when they got into that system, it taught that the man has to be the spiritual head of the house, the authority. And yet our dad wasn't
kind
of person.
No.
She was much more of a strong-willed person. Yep. She kind of wore the pants, I guess you could say.
Right.
But she was forced to knuckle under.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he never stepped up to the plate, really.
No.
And she resented that the whole time. And I think a lot of her anger towards us kids was misdirected. It was actually angry at the whole system. And, you know, I remember her complaining to me when I was a kid how our dad was a failure and he was not a spiritual leader and he wasn't even a good husband and a father. And I'm getting this stuff when I'm 9, 10, 11 years old.
Oh,
bizarre triangulation. And it turned me against him just because of that construct of this umbrella of protection. And it's all supposedly according to the Bible.
Yeah.
So it can do a lot of damage. Mm-hmm. Well, it has done.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why Mike and I have had such a great marriage, and our kids are great kids because we were always equals, and he always treated me as an equal.
It makes a huge difference. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm wondering too now, as we're kind of wrapping it up, what advice would you give to someone who is deconstructing? Because we said this too, that deconstruction looks different for every person, and even our journey out of religion, Christianity, and church and everything has taken a different path.
Yeah.
What would you say to someone? What's your advice? They're sitting there in the church having these questions, doubts, cognitive dissonance. What would you say in terms of advice for such a person? Where do they go? What do they do?
Leave the church.
Okay. That's a simple answer.
Yeah, that's easy.
Walk away.
Well,
that's the first thing though.
Yeah,
you gotta walk away
and you have to remove yourself physically from the guilt and the shame and the negativity.
Yes, you're not literally hearing it week in and week out.
Yeah, that you're a worm and that you're not worth anything.
Broken before God.
Yeah. You're not worth anything. And, you know, it's, you just have to get away from that. And for me, the thing that has helped the most is not only just walking away from the church, but stop trying to live up to this God ruler and this measurement that Christians have towards you. And
it's unrealistic, isn't it?
It's completely unrealistic. And if I have to, you know, if people want to disown me because of how I feel, I'm the happiest I've been since I was probably 10.
Before
I became a Christian.
Before it all started.
Even my husband, who's known me since I was 10, says, hey, you're like the old Val that I knew as a kid.
50 years ago.
Yeah, 50
so
years 50 ago.
50 years.
Yeah. And so that, you know, just you've got to find whatever path helps you heal. For me, it's been doing the meditation podcasts. And I do, it's like a 30-minute podcast. I try to do it every day. And it's just been so healing for me. I mean, everybody's got to find that healing path and what works for them.
Yeah, it's going to be different for everybody.
So
it's going to take a lifetime, as our friend David Hayward, the naked pastor, says.
Yeah.
It took us all of our lifetimes to go through it all.
Yeah, right.
50 years in your case and pretty much 40-some years in my case, or all my life.
Yeah.
Except for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's going to take a long time to disentangle, probably the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
Because I'm still triggered, like you said, driving past churches and hearing a worship song, or who knows what it could be. It could be something that triggers me.
Some scripture.
And then I have to go back.
On a wall.
Yeah, I've got to go back and go, okay, what's going on? Why am I feeling these emotions?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I need to go through it and process. And it's helpful to have a community of people to talk to. And you got to find that community.
Yeah,
that's the
absolutely.
Other piece, isn't it?
Yeah.
Whatever that is for you,
whoever's
whether it's
walked
online
in your shoes.
Listening to a podcast like this or some other one, getting in touch with people who are have been there, done that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's hugely empowering.
And that you're not alone. You know, listening to your podcasts, I realize I'm not alone in this journey.
And we're not crazy.
Yeah, we're not. That's the thing. We're not
crazy.
Be,
but.
Well, you and I are normal.
We're normal. Well, how can people get a hold of you? What's the best way? Are they able to find you on Facebook or
just go through you.
So if you want to talk to Val, in fact, we will share. This is a really cool story. After our podcast last year, I got an email from a woman, and turns out she was not far from you, was she? In your area in the northwest of Washington State.
Right.
And then I forwarded on to Valerie, and you did get together with her.
Yeah, I've gotten together with her several times.
That was really an amazing story.
It has been great.
You know, you got to meet her through this podcast, through our story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so even if we touch one person.
Even one. Yeah.
That was worth
it. Absolutely,
If you want to talk to Valerie, you can send me an email. Probably the best way to get a hold of me is just to follow me on Twitter at MindShift2018. You're not on Twitter yet.
Not yet. Haven't decided to do that yet.
Haven't decided to go that route, but I can put you in touch with Valerie.
Yeah.
You can send me a message on Twitter, or the other links to my social media are always in the show notes. So thank you, Valerie Haycock Cunningham.
Yeah, absolutely.
For traveling to France, United Kingdom, France, Belgium. We went through four countries in one day on the way home.
Yeah.
So that was an epic trip.
Yep.
We will hopefully do this again.
Yeah.
See. We've had this conversation. I'm trying to get down to the World War I battlefields every year. So this is my third year, your second year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So never rule it out.
I know. There's so much more to see.
So much more to see.
I know.
And that's kind of like a good way to put life, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There's so much more to see. Let's live life
and
do away from religion.
Yeah.
So thanks for joining me and Valerie on this epic journey. As it were, too, of life 1 year, almost exactly 1 year later. So thank you, Valerie, for being on Mindshift Podcast, and we will keep in touch for sure.
Yeah.
And hopefully somebody will want to talk to you, or me too, as a result of hearing this show.
Yeah.